Radio Prague News.
The Czech Republic has refused to support the UN Global Compact on Migration. A strike by German railway workers has disrupted traffic to the Czech Republic, and a biographical film about Václav Havel has been granted a record state subsidy. The Czech Republic absented itself from a meeting of UN representatives in Marrakesh on Monday, at which 164 states signed the Global Compact on Migration. The Czech government announced earlier that it would withdraw from the pact, citing ambiguities in its interpretation. Czech officials argue that the compact does not draw a clear line between legal and illegal migration, or state that illegal migration is undesirable. Around a dozen other countries, including the United States, Austria, Hungary and Poland, have also refused to support the Global Compact. President Miloš Zeman is to host an Advent dinner for cabinet ministers at Lány Chateau on Monday evening. The dinner, which is seen as an opportunity for informal consultations on government matters, will be attended by the entire cabinet led by Prime Minister Andrej Babiš. The government on Monday concluded a two-day government session at Štětín Chateau, at which ministers discussed government aid, economic diplomacy and other issues. The meeting was consultative and no decisions were taken. A four-hour strike by German railway workers on Monday disrupted local, regional and long-distance train traffic spilling over into neighbouring countries. Czech railway spokesman Radek Joklík warned passengers on routes to Berlin and Munich in particular to expect long delays throughout the day. Some connections may be scrapped altogether. Passengers have been advised to check out the situation on Czech railways' webpages. The State Fund for Cinematography has agreed to subsidise 8 Czech films to the tune of 64 million crowns. The highest single subsidy was granted to a biographical film on the life of Václav Havel, produced by Slavek Horák. The film will cover Havel's life from 1968 to 1989, when the dissident writer was elected president of Czechoslovakia. The project received a subsidy of 14.5 million crowns. Unemployment in the Czech Republic remained at 2.8% in November, the same as in the previous month, the Czech Labour Office announced on Monday. The number of jobless dropped to 215,000, which is the lowest figure since June 1997, while the number of vacancies increased to over 323,000. Last November, unemployment stood at 3.5%. The lowest rate of unemployment, 1.8%, is in the Pardubice region, while the highest rate is in the Moravia Silesia and Ústí nad Labem regions, where 4.3% of people are out of work. And finally, a quick look at the weather forecast. Tuesday should be overcast around the country with snow or rain showers and day temperatures between 0 and 4 degrees Celsius. I'm Daniela Lazarová, and that's the end of the news.
Hello and welcome to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech Radio. Coming up in today's program, why did the communist regime allow the first public demonstration on the 10th of December 1988? Czech food export levels reached nearly 18 billion crowns last year. We have a summary of the latest Czech sports news, and later we speak to Marie Tomanová, a Czech photographer whose career is really beginning to take off in the US. All that coming up, so please stay with us. Monday is the 30th anniversary of the first demonstration ever permitted by Czechoslovakia's communists. But why did the regime allow their enemies like Václav Havel to speak publicly on the 10th of December 1988? And what did it mean for dissidents themselves? Ian Willoughby reports.
Chants of freedom resounded on Škrupovo náměstí in Prague's Šiškov district on the 10th of December 1988, during the first demonstration permitted by Czechoslovakia's communists in four long decades. Historian Petr Blažek says there were a number of reasons the regime allowed the event, organized by Charter 77 and several other groups on Human Rights Day. Western states had criticized violent crackdowns on previous demonstrations. French President François Mitterrand had met Czech dissidents in Prague the previous day. And, says Blažek, the communists thought it would be better if the opposition let off steam well away from the city centre.
The idea of a kind of Hyde Park where dissidents could speak without being very visible, ideally on the outskirts, was discussed at the Central Committee on December 2nd. The organisers applied to a hold gathering on Wenceslas Square. That was rejected, but they were told by the Prague Party Committee that it could happen elsewhere.
The first speaker to address the crowd was Václav Havel.
It seems we live in tense and notable, if not dramatic, times. On one hand, the authorities are intensifying repression. They are arresting freely acting citizens and turning water cannon on them. On the other, society is starting to throw off the yoke of fear, and increasing numbers are daring to express their real opinions. It's hard to tell what will happen next.
Petr Blažek says Havel's speech was characteristic of the entire demonstration.
He came across as quite shy and it wasn't that convincing, but on the other hand, the very fact he could speak in Prague at a public meeting for the first time in 20 years or so was of course a major change.
The historian says an estimated 2,000 or 3,000 people turned up for the gathering. Some regime opponents had stayed away out of fear of the usual riot police violence. Others only heard about the hastily agreed event when it was over. In any case, the demonstration on Škrupovo náměstí was the last permitted by the communists before their regime fell asunder less than a year later.
The comrades on the Prague committee and even the party leadership got lots of angry letters from local party offices in Prague 3 asking how such a gathering had received a permit. I think that's one reason that official commemorations were not allowed in the 20th anniversary of the self-immolation of Jan Palach.
Historian Petr Blažek ending that report by Ian Willoughby. Now, Czech food export levels have reached nearly 18 billion crowns last year, more than double the amount sold abroad in 2010. The steady growth is largely thanks to the international nature of supermarket chains such as Lidl and Penny, which sell the products in their stores across Europe. Tom McEncrow reports.
Czechs love shopping in supermarkets and hunting for discounts. The country is in fact known for the great number of shopping malls and stores it contains. However, it seems that supermarket chains are also helping Czech farmers break into foreign markets. Speaking to Czech television, the head of the Czech Confederation of Commerce and Tourism, Tomáš Prouza, recently said that it is the international character of these grocery retailers which helps get Czech products into foreign markets. In the past 8 years, the amount of Czech exports has more than doubled, and data shows how much supermarket chains contribute to this process. For example, one of Europe's largest food retailers, Lidl, which is also popular in the Czech Republic, has steadily increased the export numbers of its Czech produce in the past 7 years, going from 2.8 billion crowns in 2011 to 5.5 billion in 2017. Lidl spokeswoman Zuzana Holá offered more details.
Last year in 2017, we exported products made by 145 producers. These are sold in various European countries, a number that is also growing. Last year it reached 24. Our export data to countries where Lidl is active shows that Czech producers are increasingly more popular in Europe. Not only is the number of Czech producers who are on the shelves growing, but the amount of countries and the volume of products we export abroad is growing as well.
It is not just Lidl whose export numbers are growing. A smaller, yet also popular supermarket chain, Penny Market, announced its amount of Czech exports would reach nearly 500 million crowns in 2018. Asked about which Czech products are most popular abroad, Ms. Holá had this to say.
Most common are milk products and meats. We export a whole assortment of hams and salami, but we also export müsli bars. What is particularly interesting is that each country has its own flavor it likes. For example, when it comes to pâté, which is delivered under the brand Peacock, which is delivered by the company Alimex Maso, Czechs most like almonds and cranberry flavors, whereas in the UK and in Ireland, it is the Brussels and Ardennes flavors.
It is not only food which is having success, however. According to Ms. Hollar, Czech nappies are also in high demand. Asked about whether she believes the growth will continue, Ms. Hollar said that she does believe so.
I can speak from the experience we have had in the past years, and this has shown a steady increase in our export numbers each year. So, based on that, we expect growth in this year as well. Zuzana Hollar ending that report by Tom McEncrow, and Tom stays in the studio with a summary of the latest Czech sports news.
The World Floorball Championships, which took place in the Czech Republic this year, have come to an end without the home team being able to secure a medal. The Czechs, who lost 2-7 to eventual winners Finland in the semi-finals on Saturday, were defeated 2-4 by the Swiss team in the game for third place. The loss was particularly sour since the home team had managed to defeat Switzerland 6-4 earlier in the tournament during the group stages. However, the tournament overall was an organisational success for the country, registering a new record attendance for the tournament of over 180,000. In ice skating, three-time Olympic champion Martina Sablikova came in fifth in the 5,000 metres during a World Cup meeting in Poland. The 31-year-old ice skating legend had not finished outside a podium spot at that distance for 13 years. Her coach, Petr Novák, said that the result was due to a sickness Sablikova had contracted.
She had a headache in the morning as well as stomach problems that prevented her from eating. It's no disaster. I congratulate her because under these circumstances, fifth place is a good result.
After second-placed Plzeň in football beat Zlín 2-0 on Friday, the Czech Football League leaders Slavia Prague knew they also had to win to hold on to their four-point lead in the table. And despite a nail-biting finish, in which their opponents Mladá Boleslav scored 2 goals in 4 minutes, Slavia managed to win 3-2 and maintained that advantage. Meanwhile, Slavia's historical rival, Sparta Prague, is facing yet more problems. After losing 1-0 at home to Teplice this weekend, the most successful club in the history of Czech football is currently fifth, 15 points behind the leaders. During the game, Sparta fans chanted that the current manager, Zdeněk Šťastný, should be sacked. The team has only won 2 of its past 9 games. And in ice hockey, 23-year-old Czech forward Ondřej Kaše helped the Anaheim Ducks beat New Jersey 6-5 by scoring a goal and adding 2 crucial assists that helped tie the game at 2-3 and 3-4 down, respectively. Kaše's goal came after a curious situation when his own shot, which had been boxed out by the goalie's blocker, was accidentally smashed into the net by New Jersey defender Andy Green. The own goal was 1 of 3 that New Jersey managed to score that night, something even the Devils' own coach John Hines admitted he had not yet seen in his entire career.
Just a reminder that you are listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. Maria Tomanová is a young Czech photographer whose career is really starting to gain momentum in the United States, and she's Ian Willoughby's guest now in this edition of One on One.
US-based Czech photographer Maria Tomanová is known for her striking portrait work and often nude images of her own body interacting with nature. Right now, Tomanová's career is on the up and up. She made a splash in New York with a solo show this year, has her first monograph coming out soon, and is also set to be the subject of a documentary. When we met, I asked the Moravian-born artist what had led her to the US
almost 8 years ago.
I never really was the kind of person who dreams whole life about going to the United States. Never really was my intention. But after I finished my master's degree as a painter in Czech Republic, there was not really that much for me to do. Or I just didn't know how to, like, you know, do the career and make actual money. So, and I decided to go to the United States. I ended up signing for au pair program. So the first 2 years I was au pair in the United States. I think I was quite old for that already, so it was a little dreadful, but I survived. And my first year, I was in North Carolina, and then I moved upstate New York. And after that, I moved to the city and just felt totally in love.
How did the reality of America compare to the image that you had growing up?
Oh my gosh, it's such a huge difference than what I always thought that America is like. I guess, you know, the most I knew about America, that was from movies. And tell the truth, you know, it's Sex in the City that I watched obsessively, of course, which is crazy because, you know, I really loved it when I was 17, 18, and we had these, like, smuggled DVDs from my best friend whose cousin lived in the United States, so he was sending it in mail, and I loved it, and I really thought that's, like, how people live. I mean, I guess some still do, that's true, but, you know, it's not the reality in New York. So when I got here, one side I was disappointed. On the other hand, I was really happy that actually the image is, you know, it's way more diverse and, you know, so much richer and, you know, so many more layers than just that. But just that you have idea, I was so naive about America that when the offer to be au pair in North Carolina came in, I was like, why not? America is the same everywhere. I'll go to North Carolina. I had no idea.
I believe you started in photography by using a cell phone. That seems like a very unusual route to photography.
You know, I always considered that I started photography in the United States after I saw Francesca Woodman's show in Guggenheim Museum. And that's where I actually had a, you know, semi-professional camera. I took a few classes at School of Visual Arts and started to do photography. But then I worked on a show with curator Thomas Beachdale, an art historian. And he pulled and went through some of my older work that was shot in Czech on my first cell phone. And I've never considered that real photography or art until, you know, we actually put it in the show and it all made sense. And it was actually really interesting to see these pictures that were shot on the cell phone with it was my first cell phone with a camera. Nobody else in my little town had that. So I was photographing everything just for the purpose of, you know, having it, because I've been really always keen on writing journals. So this was like a visual journal for me. So yeah, I didn't think of them in any other sense than just having a record of stuff. And when we're looking at them, which is now like, you know, 7, 8 years old photos, and even longer than that, because I started to do that in 2005, I was really surprised how raw and real those pictures were, because they were not shot for any purpose. They were just like these glimpses of real life we were living in Mikulov, you know.
A lot of your work is focused on self-portraits of your own body interacting with nature. What's the idea behind that approach?
That kind of evolved organically based on a couple of things that, you know, were the coincidences around that time when I started photography. First of it was that I didn't really have that many friends around, basically almost none. And I was still au pair upstate New York, meaning, you know, my schedule was pretty rough. I was working all the time. And whenever we would travel with the family, because we did quite a lot of traveling, which was really great, I would wake up 2 hours before work, 6 in the morning, ran out, get the morning light, and took a couple pictures somewhere in, you know, in the Greenlands where nobody was around. So that's how it kind of all started. It wasn't nude on the beginning. They were dressed, but then, you know, there was a constant problem of what to wear, you know, to, I don't know, project some fashion, what it means, blah, 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 because I just didn't want to deal with that. It was kind of, you know, not necessary. So then it became nude, and I actually started to do trips on my own into nature, West Coast, Oregon, which is beautiful. I've never seen, you know, nature like that. It's just gorgeous. And then I shot a lot in Maine. It's a great experience for me. What I like about the self-portraits is that it's a process where I am in charge of the photo, the setup, the whole, you know, composition, and it's me running back and forth. It's cold, warm, raining, I'm nude, laying on the moss. The whole experience of it, the feeling of it, the smell of it, that's all that interests me in the picture. So I am more interested in the actual process of making that photo in a way. And I'm from a little tiny town in South Moravia, and I always spend so much time outside. And I didn't realize that, and I didn't realize how important it is for me until I moved into New York City, when everything is concrete and it's just busy, you know. So that's my escape to the nature and back to my roots.
I think a lot of Americans wouldn't be very comfortable with public nudity. Have you ever got in trouble for running around naked in the forest or whatever?
A couple of times, yeah. But people are usually like, you know, they just laugh and they think it's hilarious, so it's fine. I had this great story when I was crawled into this huge trunk and people keep walking and there's a camera on a tripod and they're like, oh, there's a camera, where's the person? And then they bend down and see me in the trunk. I'm like, hi, this is this cool project. That always helps. So, yeah.
Recently, you had a show entitled Young American. Mm-hmm. What was the thinking behind that show, that collection?
That is a whole new different body of work that I've been actually working on for a couple of years, but it all came together about a year ago. The name Young American came from the curator, Thomas Beachdale. We kind of, you know, discussed my work, and we went through my archives of photographs when I was photographing people around New York City for different projects, from editorials to, you know, other projects. And he started to pick all these close-up shot portraits, when most of them are shot on my analog little Yashica that I really love. And there was certain connection, and it ended up being a project that is very important for me in a way. And the most important realization in this whole thing was at the opening. Because, you know, shooting self-portraiture, whenever there was an opening, it was just me in front of the photo, me in the photo, and that's kind of it, right? But with this show, so many people came who were in the photographs, and it was such a beautiful energy in the crowd, and they were all so excited to see their picture on the wall and in the projection, because we projected them really large on a wall, so they're like these huge faces with their huge eyes that just stare at you. And the edit was really based on the something that's in the eyes, certain softness or certain something. I don't really know what to call it, but, you know, there's a almost like a really raw human feeling. And people were so excited, and so it was just so precious to experience the connection with such a big crowd of people, and realizing that I have so many friends. I came to United States and didn't know a single person, and all of a sudden there were 300 portraits and over 300 people came to the show. It was really sweet to realize that I do belong.
Many of the people you photographed in Young American are very distinctive looking. What were you looking for in your subjects?
See, it's all people that certain way inspire me. New York City is a great place for this. I, you know, sit on a subway and I see 5-6 people that I'm like, oh my God, I want to photograph them. So it's a never-ending inspiration of people around here. And whenever I see somebody who just strikes me in a way or inspires me, I ask them if they would, you know, photograph with me and if I can take their portrait.
But to some degree, I think your work also explores issues of identity, sexuality, gender. Would that be easier to do here than in the Czech Republic, or more interesting here, or more pertinent here?
I haven't been back home for more than 7 years, so I don't really know how things change there, and I'm really eager to explore that, and I'm going home for Christmas. That's going to be 8 years since I haven't been home, so I'm really excited, bring my cameras, and I can tell you that all the big next projects are happening partially in Czech as well. And I'm really excited to explore the connection and, you know, the difference or the sameness between Czech and America through identity, through self-portraiture, through portraits of other people and all of that.
New York is one of the most competitive places on the planet. How hard has it been for you to establish yourself here?
It is very competitive at the same time, because it's not, you know, such a small market or small, you know, pond, what we say in Czech. There is way more opportunities. Plus, the all over atmosphere here is supportive. You know, artists are very often supportive of each other in a really significant way, which I think is great and creates more opportunity for you. My past experience 7-8 years ago in Czech, it was that it always was competitive as well. Plus, there's not that many opportunities, so it's kind of more difficult and people just put themselves down, which I hate that kind of atmosphere. Here, I didn't experience that, which I love about New York, you know. So it has pros and cons. And I just think one has to be dedicated and, you know, and just keep going.
Your career seems to be really gathering momentum. You've been in lots of prestigious news outlets. There's a documentary being made about you. And you have this book coming out of Young American. Is this an exciting time for you?
Extremely. I can't wait. Yeah, I'm very excited for the book. It's going to be my first monograph, which is really great. And the documentary is just very precious because, you know, Maruška Dvořáková captured my first solo show, which my parents were not able to be here for that because they're in Czech. So my first thought when we started this was like, oh, my mom will see how the whole thing came together. And finally, I can show her what I'm doing here in New York because, you know, she doesn't really have idea. She's not on social media. And, you know, it's hard to really show how hard and challenging and exciting at the same time it is to pull together a solo show in New York City. So I was really excited about that. And then Maruška got to capture the first book and product and how we will put that whole thing together. And then she's going to record how I return home, which is really precious as well.
If everything goes according to plan, where would you like to see your life and your career in, say, I don't know, 10 years from now?
Well, I would love to do shows all over the world so I can travel, you know, with the shows and just be able to work, do what I like to do and work on more books, more shows and be able to be between Czech and New York and make money with all of that.
Marie Tomanová, the photographer's book Young American is due out in the first months of 2019 and her exhibition of the same title will come to Prague's Pragovka Gallery later in the year. And I'm afraid that's all we have time for today. If you have any comments about the program, then please send them to us. You can contact us by email at english@radio.cz or on Facebook and Twitter. But that's all for now from me, Ruth Franková. Thank you very much for joining us and goodbye.
Thank you.